Well, I thought the two top guys, I thought Winston and Mariota were outstanding. The thing that I like about Jameis Winston is I think he throws an extremely catchable ball. He's got all the arm strength you want, but he makes it easy for the receiver based on the route. He understands that. He gets it. I think just naturally and innately he gets it. What I liked about Mariota was just the footwork. You can see how athletic he, you know, he ran the 4.5, whatever he ran. But you can see that translate to his dropbacks now, sense of urgency with his feet. I think you can see, and it, I know you can, he'll be able to adapt to being able to get under center. It's the pocket awareness part that you can't tell out here. Physically, he'll be able to do all the things they ask him. And I think the guy that's just a beautiful, natural thrower of the football is Petty. And do I have a whole bunch of questions about him, pocket awareness? Absolutely. But if you were just going to stand there and play catch in the backyard or play a 7-on-7, that's my guy. He throws a beautiful football.
What did Brandon Bridge do? Did he help himself today, Brandon Bridge?
I mean, Brandon Bridge is who I thought he was, and that is he's a tall drink of water with a whip. He's got not much of a clue about footwork. He gets out of position a lot. His accuracy is all over the place, but he's a kind of guy you'd like to work with.
Mike, how does Leonard Williams rank versus some of the other premier defensive linemen that have come out in recent years?
I mean, it's really early in the process. I compare him to Richard Seymour, who's one of my favorite five techniques of all time. And Richard Seymour could play up and down the line of scrimmage in any front, three-man front, four-man front, it didn't matter. He could play every single position, and that's who I think Leonard Williams is, a guy with versatility. He's gifted. He can play outside. He can play inside, and it doesn't matter. He's scheme diverse. So every team at the top end will be looking at him.
The Senior Bowl was the first time he had actually ever done a play call.
Right.
Someone reiterated the question, said, you never done play calls. He said, no, it's been all signal calling throughout his time in college. Is that a
it's a big deal. And if you heard Bruce Arians yesterday, the day before, he basically said, hey, a lot of these college quarterbacks, all 11 guys look over at the sideline, they hold up the cards, lift the leg, snap the ball. And Bruce Arians said, that's not quarterback, that's not a leader. You know, we're looking for leaders. You know, and you can't kill a kid that hasn't had to make a play call. He's doing what his coaches ask him to do, right? So you can't kill the kid. However, it's a huge transition. So I try to give you the analogy. I mean, basically, you're talking about taking a kid that's in kindergarten and moving him to a college-level class almost overnight. That's how hard it is to pick up the verbiage, to go under center, to footwork. So here's the deal. So you're a shotgun quarterback, right? So you stand there, you lift your leg,
LSU
and the ball comes
back,
up.
Collins,
and all you do is catch,
LSU
rock,
back,
and throw.
Collins,
that's what you do. Every once in a while, you'll do a three-step drop where you catch and go 1-2, bang. However, in the NFL, what is it? It's five-step, it's seven-step, it's all these. So these guys that just catch, rock, and throw, they've never had any footwork, and you can see it. So the fact that you could start with, you got to call a play and you've never done that. You go in a huddle, you've never done that. You got to get a ball under center, which you've never done. The footwork is just completely new to you. When you add it all up, man, I mean, it's no wonder guys that come out of these systems, sometimes it takes them a while to learn how to play the game in the NFL.
His ability to transition into that, in your opinion.
Which one? Bryce Petty's got a long way to go. As much as I like him, what I said on the air today, that his TCU game to me was a microcosm of his entire career, and he threw five or six beautiful deep balls. I had all kinds of problems with him in the pocket, where if the first read wasn't there, he pulled it down, then he was indecisive, then he made a bad throw. And as much as I'm killing him for the TCU game, he put 61 points on the board and won the game. So how do you kill him, right? But he's got so far to go. As far as climbing pocket, understanding how to get to the second receiver, throwing a guy open, it's a project, and I don't think it's a one-year project. Over here?
Yeah. Hey, Mike, your impressions of the big Georgia Tech receiver, Wilder, and how tough it is to evaluate him and Smelter coming out of the Tech system?
The big kid Waller I saw at the East-West game, and he ran well today. You know, he's 6'6 and change and ran really fast. So you want to like him. The issue I had with him at the East-West game was when they did the red zone drills live, man-to-man coverage, right? A lot of the smaller D-backs were ripping the ball out of his hands. And if you're a big 6'6 guy like he is, that's where he's going to make his money, in the red zone and outside the numbers. So if 5'10" D-backs are ripping the ball out of your hands, you got a problem. So his hands have to get stronger, but he's the kind of guy you'd like to work with. The Smelter kid, who obviously is hurt, he's intriguing because I don't think he's twitchy, but he's athletic, and there's a difference. He's the baseball kid. He's kind of a powerful kid with some run after the catch, natural hands. You can see him track the ball in the air like a baseball player. So I like him. I don't know how much the injury is going to hurt him or not. Over time, you know, and he's a little bit raw.
Mike, I think you've mentioned that you want to see him like 40 now. What does that do for him, you think?
I was intrigued by all three. My top three receivers are pretty much everybody's top three, right? Kevin White's been my guy since the first time I put tape on, and I think Amari Cooper's the safe choice. He's like Torrey Holt, Amari Cooper. I mean, just everything's smooth and easy. However, what I see with White is a higher ceiling. I see a bigger guy that runs faster. So I was hoping he'd run 4.45, 4.46, somewhere in that range, and he runs 4.35, and he made everything look easy. And I just talked to some coaches walking off the field, and I was like, what'd you think of White? Every single one was like, wow, it was easy. Great hands, exploded in every drill, the run. So if you start taking a look at Oakland at number four, and if they go for the wide receiver, I think it's wide open right now with Parker, Cooper, and White.
Mike, they haven't worked out yet. Can you talk about your defensive tackle rankings? And I think right now you have Danny Shelton above Malcolm Brown. Can you talk about those two guys? Why is he Shelton above Malcolm Brown?
Well, he's 25 pounds heavier, and he moves just as well. He played 80% of the snaps for Washington, which is highly atypical for a 340-pound guy. He went sideline to sideline. He reminds me of Elodie Nada. Brown, I love. I mean, I got a first-round grade on Brown, so it's not like I dislike him. I just have him behind Shelton. Brown's a guy I think will go a little bit later. I think he'll go in the 20 to 32 range, 320 pounds. He's a natural three technique that they can move inside if they want, but he's not quite as explosive a guy, both in the run and pass game, in my opinion, as Shelton. I'm sorry?
Quick questions about the body there and also DGB's
I thought he looked good, and I tried to stay. You know, I don't get carried away too much with this. It's a cross check for me, you know. So DGB, when I watched every target he had in 2013, and the comment I made is he has no clue what he's doing, but he still tilted the field just because of his height, weight, speed, and that's kind of what I saw today. You know, he has no idea what he's doing, but he catches the ball well. He's 6'5", whatever, and he runs 4.5 or better, and some teams are going to have tough decisions to make on him. You know, and what kind of kid he is. And Shane Ray, I'm excited about tomorrow. I think it's the best edge class we've had since 2011. 12 and 13 weren't that great. And when I say edge, I mean defensive end or outside linebacker. Whoever's rushing the quarterback, I'm qualifying this year as an edge guy. And I think Dante Fowler, Shane Ray, and Randy Gregory are three outstanding edge guys. The kid from Kentucky, Dupree, I want to see him. There's a whole class of guys down through the second, third, and fourth rounds coming off the edge that I think are going to be fun. So tomorrow, we're going to begin to differentiate some of those guys. What's that?
You said in your conference call on Monday that you didn't expect a big trade market number two. Having both quarterbacks play well, show well here, and also reportedly interview well with teams, do you feel like that changes that at all, or are you steady?
I just think that if you ask me that question in a vacuum, it's different than if you're asking me if number five can move up to number two or number six can move to two as opposed to 20 move to two. You know what I mean? So is there value sitting at two for Tennessee? Absolutely. You know, I mean, if a quarterback goes at one and they're sitting at two and they're okay with Zach Mettenberger, then, yeah, the store's open. Let's see if we can barter a little bit. But Tennessee's got a tough decision to make. You know, they might want that quarterback. So I still think we won't know a thing going up till the first day of the draft. That's part of the intrigue of it. But, yeah, I still think there could be play at two, no doubt.
Mike, all the work you did on Winston coming in, was there something that you wanted to see? Did you see it, or did you just want to see him compete?
I think we kind of overemphasized the combine. I tried to say that in the conference call the other day, in that for me it's a cross-check. And the 50 hours of film work or whatever I did on Winston is not going to be overwhelmed by 20 throws out here today. But what I like is when a quarterback is not, and Tony Dungy said this to me years ago when he was coaching. He was like, we want bright lights kids. Guys that aren't afraid to get out there with 32 NFL head coaches and general managers and just rip it. Who cares? Just get out there and rip it. And that's what I try to tell all the kids that ask me if they should throw at the combine. I'm like, yeah. They don't really care if you throw an incomplete pass. They're smart enough people to understand you've never seen the wide receiver before. So a lot of times the agents or their parents or whatever say, oh, no, don't. Just get out there and rip it. And that's what they did today. So it's just another check. Bang. The kid wasn't afraid. He looked great. He was smiling. I thought it was awesome. Yeah, I think you can. I think you can get him at 40-something, too. I mean, you can get Preston Smith from Mississippi State in the second round, perhaps, who's a 4-3 hand-in-the-ground defensive end. It's a really good football player. Odighizuwa, I don't know, from UCLA, he might go in the second round somewhere. I mean, there's a better edge class, and I'm including 4-3 defensive ends and 3-4 linebackers in that group. There's a better edge class than we've seen in recent years. No, Shaq ought to say what he wants to say. I mean, God bless him. I love watching his tape. You know, and I think that's part of what makes him so interesting for all these teams is he can play. So I see him as a safety that plays dime linebacker. I talked to a couple of GMs that are even looking at him at tailback. He's been a linebacker, and that's comfortable for him. So I think the value to Shaq Thompson as a defensive player is you don't put a label on him. Okay, because he's going to be a three-down player, and it really doesn't matter where you line him up because he's going to be a good three-down player.
What do you think of Paul Dawson and how big are the red flags?
I freaking love Paul Dawson as a football player, and I don't know much about him off the field. And the first – what I like about things, when I first get the first tapes in and I start – you know, I don't know a thing about most of these kids off the field. I just throw the tape in, and the tape doesn't lie. And that kid is as instinctive, quick, and downhill a linebacker as I've seen in years. And his tape against – I want to say Minnesota was so much fun to watch. Three down linebacker can get overwhelmed at times by a big body, but he reacts so quickly that he's able to get under or over the top and still make a play. He's great in pass coverage. Somebody's going to be real happy with him as a 4-3 will linebacker or perhaps even an inside guy, depending on what you play. Love him. I think right now, long corners are in, and it makes sense when you're drafting Kelvin Benjamin and you're drafting Mike Evans and all those big wideouts who are making immediate impacts. You're looking for longer corners. So Trey Wayans is a longer corner. He comes out of a program that I have a lot of respect for on the defensive side of the football. You know what you're getting. You know, I felt the same way about Denard last year, except this kid's longer. So I think you know what you're getting. The Peters kid from Washington will find out a lot more, I think, as the process goes on of him off the field. He's a similar guy who's very confident in press coverage. I think the dark horse here a little bit is the LSU kid, Jalen Collins, who I didn't know much about until a couple of weeks ago when I watched his tape, and I went, wow, kid started 12 games or whatever in his career, and he's a first-round physical trait corner who I got to learn a lot more about, but he's similar. So those three, and then maybe even P.J. Williams from Florida State, you throw them all in the mix, there's a bunch of good long corners at the top end of this draft.
What evaluation of Devin Smith and what range do you foresee him?
A lot of wideouts this year, man. I mean, just like last year. And I have a second round, or you said Devin Smith. I have a second round grade on Devin Smith, and he ran, I believe, in the low to mid 4.4s today. I thought he was going to go under 4.4. Just, I'll tell you what he does better than any wide receiver I've seen in several years is he tracks the deep ball. And if you look at his average per catch at 28 or whatever it is, big play guy. Defensive backs were literally lining up 7 yards off and turning and running. They were so worried about getting beat deep, and he still beat them deep, and then he tracks the deep ball. There's value to that. So I really like him. The thing about this draft is I don't know where Funchess is going or what he's going to be. I don't know where DGB, Green Beckham, is going. Or I don't know any of the Brashad Perryman, who didn't work out today because of an – he's another guy that if he tests well, he could make a – you can make a conversation about him in the first round. And then you start talking about your guy, Devin Smith, or Philip Dorsett, or those kinds of guys. And it's exciting how deep you can get in this wide receiver class again with quality players.
Okay, Mike, since you're talking about the wide receivers and size –
biggest knock on Tyler Lockett is his size. How much did today's workout help?
Well, I thought what it did was differentiate himself from, quote, slot receivers. So if you're going to put him in there with Jamison Crowder from Duke, and I had him slotted in there together kind of, and I knew off tape that Crowder was going to be quicker than fast, and I thought Lockett was going to run fast. And that's what happened today. Crowder was like 4.56 plus or minus. And that's what – so Crowder's kind of a slot receiver with great return skills. Lockett, by virtue of running 4.4 and being a little bigger, is a slot. He's outside. He's a return guy. He helped himself because he ran 4.4, no doubt about it.